Jesus walked that lonesome valley. Jesus walked by himself. Ain't nobody else can walk it for him. He had to walk it by himself. I'm gonna walk that lonesome valley. I'm gonna walk by myself. Ain't nobody here can walk it for me. I'm gonna walk it by myself. You gotta walk that lonesome valley. You gotta walk it by yourself. Ain't nobody here can walk it for you. You gotta walk it by yourself. Ain't nobody here walk it for you. You gotta walk it by yourself.
After his baptism, Jesus is led out into the wilderness, that lonesome valley. You know the story about how he's there by himself for 40 days, nothing to eat, alone, dried out. And then how finally there in the wilderness, he's tempted by the devil not once, but three times. In a lot of ways, it seems like a fairly straightforward story, except the temptations he faces are kind of over the top, aren't they? Not only that, but it seems like Jesus resists temptation solely by quoting scripture. That's how he holds off the devil, how he keeps himself from becoming tangled up with the temptations the devil offers. Let's revisit the story for a moment. After all that time without food there in the wilderness, the devil says to Jesus, "You're hungry? Turn this stone to bread. Show that you have the power of miracle making. Save yourself." Jesus won't do it. Instead, he replies, "It's written, one does not live by bread alone." And then the devil says to Jesus, "Do you want to rule all the kingdoms of the world? Just worship me. Take control of your future. Show who you are and what you can do." And Jesus resists that temptation too, replying, "It is written, worship the Lord your God and serve only him." Finally, the devil speaks to Jesus a third time and says, essentially, "Do you want to know if God values you, cares about your fate? Then throw yourself down off the highest point of the temple and let God send angels to catch you. Let God prove to you that you matter." But Jesus won't do that either. He replies from scripture once more, "It is written, do not put the Lord your God to the test." Okay, fine. Jesus is tempted to do miracles. Jesus is tempted to try to rule the world. Jesus is tempted to test God by throwing himself from the pinnacle of the temple. The devil apparently knows where Jesus' weak spots are, how to test him, how to lure him away from trusting in God, how to try to work a wedge between him and God. But this story, these temptations, 1, 2, 3, have what to do with us exactly? Last time I checked, none of us is going to be tempted to perform miracles or take over the world or put the Almighty to the ultimate test, as if we could do any of those things even if we wanted to. It would seem that temptations are only relevant if there's actually a possibility that you could do the thing that would get you into hot water. Miracle making and world domination are hardly on our list, right? But before we dismiss the relevance of what Jesus experiences in the wilderness, the story of these temptations themselves, as well as this odd and somewhat stilted conversation between Jesus and the devil, let's take a step back and think about just where Jesus is when all this happens. This past week on Ash Wednesday, Seth centered the worship service we had here at the church on the word wilderness. The journey of Lent is a wilderness journey. And in this season, we are invited to put our own wilderness experiences alongside or in touch with Jesus' 40 days in the wilderness, a time of testing, of vulnerability, of hunger, of disorientation, of recognizing our own mortality, a time of being alone. And I think that last piece, that last word, alone, is really important. In the wilderness, Jesus was alone. In the wilderness, we are alone. And when we are alone is when we are most vulnerable to whatever it is that tempts us. Whatever it is that tempts us to act in ways that make us even more alone. To act in ways that cut us off from care, from accountability, from relationship, from healing. For Jesus, alone in the wilderness, his temptation to turn stone to bread is the temptation to believe that there is no one who will feed him, that he is utterly dependent on himself. No one else will care for him or take care of him. Is that a dangerous temptation? Of course it is. Because when you reach the point where you no longer believe that anybody cares for you or will help to take care of you, you will turn to self-reliance, which is always more isolating. And self-reliance can cut you off from compassion. Not only compassion received, but maybe even compassion given. If self-reliance becomes your chief coping mechanism, your chief tool, and you take that far enough, it also becomes your God. That's one temptation that comes when we are alone. The second temptation is this: for Jesus alone in the wilderness, his temptation to make a deal with the devil, to rule all the kingdoms of the world in exchange for bowing down to Satan, is just that, a deal with the devil. We may not have the means or opportunity to rule the world, but we know what that urge is like. Being willing to trade allegiance for power. It happens all the time. Just look at the political system now and how people trade away their integrity left and right for a chance to sit at the grown-up table. It's interesting because belonging to a political party, for example, is not the same thing as belonging to a community. It's a false belonging. A political party will promise you a seat at the table until you object to what is being planned or promoted around that table, and then suddenly the group will turn on you and you will be no longer welcome, and you will be more alone than you ever were before. Chasing power is isolating. The third one, then. For Jesus alone in the wilderness, his temptation to test God, the particular example being to throw himself from the pinnacle of the temple in order to force God's hand, force God to send angels to catch him, is maybe the most strange the most far-fetched of these temptations, and yet it may be the most relevant of all. The question it pries open is this: do I matter? Am I worthy of attention? Am I worthy of mercy? And when we feel unworthy, it will always lead us to judge the worthiness of others. And such judgment will always cut us off from others. So maybe what tempts Jesus isn't so far from what is relevant for us. But the way to see that isn't just to look at the temptations themselves, miracle-making, power-grabbing, angel-demanding, but to look at what happens when we are alone in the wilderness. What happens when we feel cut off? What happens when we feel abandoned? What happens when we chase power? What happens when we forget our deep and lasting and vital connections to God and to the community? What happens when we walk that lonesome valley? And alone with our doubts, our fears, our hungers, we choose a path into deeper isolation. Look, we may think of temptations as big things, things that might lead us to over-the-top actions, taking the big bad risk, using our powers as large or as limited as they might be for bad instead of good, inflating our own importance, dragging others into our poor decisions, the temptation to reach for more, as if what we most often face is on the scale of the temptations that Jesus faces: to make miracles, to rule the world, to jump from the highest point. But I wonder if the greatest temptations that face most of us are the temptations not toward more, but toward less. The temptation to curl into ourselves rather than opening ourselves. The temptation to give up our integrity or our trust because in our aloneness we have become so scared or so desperate that rather than reaching for connection, we lock ourselves into a place or a posture of separation. There are lots of ways to define sin. Some will define it in terms of breaking the rules. Others will say that it has to do with being pure versus being corrupt. But maybe more helpful than any of those is this idea about sin, that sin is that which separates us from God and from each other. Sin is that which drives a wedge between us and the one who created us, between us and the ones who can help us or heal us. That sin is that which makes us more alone. If that is true, then to sin is to act in ways that reinforces or increases our aloneness. Thinking and acting in ways that further the separation between us and God, between us and the community, taking that aloneness and solidifying it into isolation. Let me see if I can bring the temptation thing a little closer to home, make it a little less grandiose and a little more down to earth. Okay, you might not be tempted, as Jesus was, to perform a miracle of turning stone to bread as an expression of giving up your trust in God in exchange for a foolish effort to make yourself the one in charge. You may not be tempted to act in that way. But in your aloneness, in your wilderness, you may be tempted toward self-pity, becoming more and more committed to the idea that you are completely and truly alone, and that there is no one who will feed you, no one who cares about you. And if you give in to the temptation of self-pity, then what felt like aloneness solidifies into isolation. You've taken disappointment and fossilized it into isolation and maybe even resentment. That's a real temptation that we have. The temptation to take aloneness and turn it into self-pity. The temptation to take hunger and turn it into resentment. Or how about this? You might not be tempted as Jesus was tempted to try to rule the world in exchange for a simple bowing down to the devil. That is, making a deal to trade power for an unwise allegiance. You may not be tempted that way. But in your aloneness, in your wilderness, you may be tempted toward contempt, becoming more and more committed to the idea that you alone know what's right, because no one else sees as clearly as you do. No one is as smart as you are. And so it seems reasonable that dismissing or disrespecting those who oppose you is the only safe and sensible thing to do. You may not want to rule all the kingdoms of the world, but you certainly may take steps to put up a wall and a moat and a drawbridge around your small castle. Writing in an op-ed piece this week titled "Our Culture of Contempt," Arthur Brooks talks about motive attribution asymmetry, which is basically the idea that you ascribe a completely different motive to yourself than you ascribe to those who disagree with you. Your motives are always good, and theirs are always bad. And giving into this sort of temptation leads us down a dangerous path. Brooks says that past incivility or intolerance is contempt, which is a noxious brew of anger and disgust, and not just contempt for other people's ideas, but also for other people. In the words of the philosopher Arthur Schopenhauer, contempt is, quote, the unsullied conviction of the worthlessness of another. Brooks doesn't say this, but contempt is not only toxic to your own soul, it kills community. It makes you even more alone. So it's a dangerous temptation to give in to. So what's the antidote to temptation? In the story for this morning, Jesus uses scripture. It feels like it's just quoting Bible verses, but it's not. It's Jesus finding words to say who he is and who he belongs to and how he's connected. If it is aloneness and isolation and self-pity and contempt that leads us down the wilderness road to sin, maybe we too need to face down the devil with words that strengthen and connect and confirm the ways in which we belong to God and to each other. So how about a temptation-facing scripture antidote like this from Jesus' own words from the very last verse of the Gospel of Matthew? "And remember," he says to his followers, "I am with you always, to the end of the age." Or this reminder from Galatians 5, "The fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, generosity, faithfulness, gentleness, self-control. There's no law against such things." How's that for a reminder of who we are? Or this from 1 Corinthians 13, "Love never ends. Faith, hope, and love abide, these three, but the greatest of these is love." Or do you want a verse about connection? How about one from the Old Testament? How about these words from Moses to Joshua when the people were finally done wandering in the wilderness and ready to enter the promised land? A verse from Deuteronomy 31, "Be strong and bold. Have no fear or dread, because it is the Lord your God who goes with you. God will not fail you or forsake you." The long and short of it is this: when you are alone, you are vulnerable. When you forget that you are connected or part of a community, you are vulnerable. So in those times, in the lonesome valley, the temptations you face are different, but no different than the ones Jesus faced. The temptations to be more alone, more isolated, more self-reliant, less connected, less trusting. But don't give in. Don't choose isolation and self-pity and contempt when you can choose hope and healing and connection. When you sense you are being separated, let God come close again. Let the community surround you again. Let love and life lead you again, both in the wilderness and then out of the wilderness. Look, we've got a season of 40 days ahead, 40 days to think about such things, 40 days to let the test come right to our doorstep, 40 days to be self-reflective rather than self-reliant, 40 days to find the right words to describe who we are and how we're connected and how we belong, 40 days to face the things that tempt us. Don't try to avoid it. Let yourself live into it. Live into some of the dryness of the wilderness and let yourself wonder about where God is and where God might take you when it feels like you're being separated. You can live into that and at the same time remember and hold on to this, that even when you are alone, you are not alone. Even when you're alone, you are not alone. You know that, don't you? No matter what the devil might whisper in your ear.